Hello and welcome to the Big Happy Life podcast. I'm Natalie Britt, a coach, trainer and hypnotherapist. And this week I'm joined by Evelyn Pacitti, who is the founder of Measurable Wellness, a company dedicated to helping corporate teams and individuals really get to grips with the driving forces behind their energy levels by learning what to track and how to track so that they can gather data about what works for them and what doesn't, and from that they can make decisions that serve them better. Whether you are someone who feels you're nearing burnout, maybe even has burnt out before, or is somebody who's like, I can do it all, and you're striving and pushing and constantly going despite the fact that you feel exhausted a lot of the time, this episode is for you. So let's dive in. So, Evelyn, you are a burnout resiliency coach, right?
That's correct.
And you bring together the principles of engineering and wellness. What does that mean?
Well, I am classically trained as an engineer. I studied physics in my undergrad. I have a master's degree in electrical engineering with a specialization in lasers. Pew, pew. So when I was in my hopefully last burnout in 2017, I was laying there on the couch in the fog and exhaustion of burnout thinking, what is going on here? How does this make any sense? I'm going for walks, I'm doing my meditation, I'm doing my therapy, but how do I know this is working? Am I more or less tired than yesterday? How do I take this ethereal, fluffy conversation of wellness, energy management, exhaustion, and burnout and make it quantifiable? And that's what I started to do. And that's when I started to see the biggest progress in my recovery was when I was able to say, okay, how much energy do I have remaining today? Was today a positive day, a neutral day, or a depleted day? If it was a depleted day, I said, what can I change tomorrow to make it neutral or make it slightly less depleted? And then I had now a parameter. I had a metric to look at. Am I more or less tired than yesterday? The decisions that I made today, are they helping or hurting my recovery process? And with that, I was able to build a feedback loop to design my own optimized and unique wellness and self-care plan that feeds what I need rather than what I was told I was supposed to be doing.
Okay. So by engineering, you mean measuring and tracking, but you're measuring and tracking your wellness by
exactly.
Measuring energy. What else were you measuring?
I measure several parameters at this point because I like to do correlations, but right now the major thing that I track is what are my energy levels.
Okay. And how do you know? Like, what do you base it on?
You sort of just have to trust yourself. And I think that's the thing. It is always going to be an ethereal thing. It is always going to be a bit fluffy. And I think today, so I've been asking myself this question, how much energy do I have right now? Or I usually ask at the end of the day. I've tried all sorts of parameters, like every hour, at the end of the workday, multiple times a day. But where I found most consistent is I ask myself at the end of every day, how much energy do I have remaining? And do I have extra energy? Do I feel just like I have enough? I had enough to get through the day? Or do I feel depleted? And that is enough of a question for me to just put a plus, a zero, or a minus in my notes. Or I actually use a numeric system so that I can add it over time, but same, you get the feel. Mm-hmm. But you get them with that question alone, I'm able to see the trends. I'm able to see the patterns. If I look at a month, if I look at several months in a row, am I seeing that I'm consistently having more depleted days? Mm-hmm. Then if I look at that, I say, okay, what has changed in my life that this is happening? Is it okay that I'm in a period of depletion in my life right now? Maybe I'm moving house. Maybe there's big things going on in the family. And it's okay to operate depleted because you have a reserve tank you can pull from. And mm-hmm. That's really where burnout comes from, or chronic exhaustion is if you don't have anything in your reserve tank because you've been running depleted for years and years and just emptying that reserve tank, then you have nothing to work with. So in the model that I have, you have two tanks. You have sort of this daily tank and you have your reserve tank. And if you run out of energy in your daily thing and you're pushing through and you're just trying to survive the day, you get that energy from your reserve tank. Mm. But if you're constantly pulling from your reserve tank, eventually it's going to be empty. And if you pull from an empty tank, you'll crack it. And that's what I really call burnout, is where your tank is cracked. So when you start to recover, it's not as effective anymore. That 2-week vacation that used to recharge you, it's just not as effective because you're losing the energy out of your tank. You've cracked it and broken it. So now you have to take extra effort to recover, which when you're already operating in a severely depleted state, because how much energy you have today is proportional to how much is in your tank. Like, it's a whole system. But by having this model in my head, I was able to look, take a step back and say, okay, I understand how this process is working. I see that if I run depleted, I deplete my reserve tank. So I wake up with less energy the next day. So then doing the same amount of tasks depletes me, then depleting my tank even more. And that is the cycle of exhaustion. That's why we end up waking up more and more tired, because we keep pulling from that tank. And that's why the transition, that step into recovery, into replenishing your energy levels, is an active process, because you have to say, I want to replenish my energy, and I'm making decisions to have days that start to refill that tank.
That makes so much sense. You've just dropped another piece of the puzzle into place for me, because I quite recently learned this sort of three parts of stress model, which is you're stressed, then you have the absence of stress, and then you have the recovery from stress. So what you've just said has made me realize when you are not depleted, so in the early stages of stress, the absence of stress is enough. So sitting on the sofa and chilling out and relaxing, or going on the holiday, having the weekend away, whatever, any of those kinds of things, they take away the stress, but they don't necessarily, depending on what you do in that time, they don't refill the tank. So what we learn to do over a period of time is do things that are in that space of the absence of stress, whatever those things are for us. In those moments when we do them, we are not stressed. And we think that we're recovering, but nothing is being topped up in the reserve tank. It's only addressing today's tank and saying, okay, I'm not going to take any more out of today's tank. But no activity during the day has done anything to replenish the reserve tank, which means tomorrow's stress is going to take a tiny bit more out of the reserve tank. And then you'll stop and chill out on the sofa. And then the next day, take a little bit more out of the reserve tank. And so it goes on. But at no point do we have any activities that are going to replenishment, because that's the recovery of stress. And in the absence of actual deliberate recovery, eventually the reserve tank runs dry. So you mentioned my last burnout. How many times did you burn out?
3.5.
I suppose a half you caught early on?
Exactly. So so I burnt out in undergrad. And basically my tongue swelled up for a week and I couldn't talk. But I had papers, I had research to do, things to publish. And my best friend was like, we're going to the hospital. I was like, no, that's totally fine. I don't know what this is. It's just a I'll be fine later. In retrospect, that was my first burnout. When I was in my first job, I woke up one day and my arms and legs were shaking uncontrollably. It's as if I was having a seizure, but fully awake. I had no control over my body. It would just shake. I actually went to the hospital, because that's what you do when you're having full body seizures while fully awake. And the ER team said, you don't have seizures when you're awake. It's not a medically possible. We would tell you you were making it up, but you know, you're here and you have an engineering degree and things. So we feel like you're not completely making it up and wasting our time. So we'll at least look at you. I went home from that experience. I took a week off of work and I literally went to the chiropractor every day and played video games and eventually blamed it on a root canal that I found a couple months later. And I was like, oh, it was the poison of the root canal seeping into my system that caused this. In retrospect, pretty sure it was a burnout and my body physically reacting to the level of exhaustion and stress I was carrying both in my career, combination of my relationship at the time and other things that had just caused my system to be like, we're done. And then in grad school, I accidentally prevented a burnout because what I was doing was I would go 3 days a week to my best friend's farm in the countryside. And I'd wake up in the morning and I'd write my thesis between 6 a.m. and noon. And then I'd stop and I'd hang out with her in the afternoon and we wouldn't do any work. And we would just play and go to dinner and chat and watch movies. And I was doing that probably 3 or 4 times a week. And then I'd go back to campus. I'd see my advisor. I'd go back to the lab. But that adding in intentional breaks and changing of space and giving myself that permission not to be working and on focus all the time, I think prevented a full burnout. Mm. I was on the edge. I was really stressed, but I didn't have the physical shutdown during that one. So that's why I call that a half a burnout.
Okay.
And then in my final burnout in 2017, when the office identified my burnout and actually sent me home, which to this day, I'm still very grateful that the manager identified this because I was not in a space to identify it. I shut down. The next month after I was told that work was no longer my concern and that I was on medical leave, I don't remember the next month because I had nothing that required me to keep the facade up. So the scaffolding that was holding me up just collapsed around me.
Mm.
And I dropped into the fog of exhaustion.
Mm. So two things have collided in my head because I had a question I wanted to ask you directly from that. But what you've just described, I think potentially a lot of people went through during the COVID lockdown is like the scaffolding that was holding a lot of us up disintegrated. And quite a lot of people, I think, didn't know what to do with that. But that's an aside. Just want to come back to the burnout, your description of your burnout. How would you define burnout?
For me, burnout I define, and it has a technical, medical, like psychological definition. But for me, it is the point where your body and your mind physically are reacting to stress. Like you are exhibiting mental and physical symptoms in reaction to prolonged levels of stress. And this is why I'm very careful about talking about burnout versus exhaustion. I don't like if you're in full burnout, I believe that you should be seeing a therapist. You're at a different level than working with someone like me. I help prevent burnout. I help you recover from burnout when you get to that point where you need that other help. I help build up burnout resiliency because burnout was one of the best things that ever happened to me in my life. It forced me to reevaluate what I was doing. I learned how to find a work-life balance that enabled me to be there both for my work, my career, and my family, and the rest of my life. Enjoy my experiences in a way that if I look at before my burnout, the last 5 years before my burnout, I don't have any discrete memories. It's one giant blur of work and stress. And that just all accumulated all through all of the years. And I'm sure that before that, it was just as bad. I would say today, energetically and focus-wise, I'm probably the best I've been since my early 20s.
Mm. Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? I'm the same. And I think because we track a lot of the same things and we do a lot of the same things, which actually leads me to my next question. So you said you started out with a plus, neutral or minus, but now you have a sort of more sophisticated numerical system. I'd love you to describe the system, but we'll come back to that. What I would like to ask you first, though, is now that you've been tracking it for a number of years, what are some of the things that you have found will reliably deplete you?
It's reverse of the question I usually get, which I love. That's why there is a pause. What are the things that reliably deplete me?
Yeah. So you go into the minus, you go into that minus, or your numbers come down and you're like, oh yeah, I did that yesterday. That's why. Or I did this today. That's why that's happened. Are there things that you can point to go, yeah, pretty much this is a pattern?
Yeah. So this is actually the thing I found most surprising in my research was it's when I call it, when I'm operating in superpower mode, mm-hmm. it's when I consider myself, and it's when I was in my career, when I really like, it's the part where you feel like you're on your game, you're hyper-focused, you're interactive, you're firing on all the cylinders, and it's amazing, but it is depleting your system at incredible speeds. And I mean, by the time I'm done with that, like I'll pop out the other side and then I'll go, and I'm like, oh, I did it again. And like, that's okay, because you want to operate in that mode. Sometimes you need that for certain days, but anymore, when I know that those sort of moments are coming, I plan for my recovery from them. Mm-hmm. And so it's one of those things that, and it was really disturbing, I don't think is the right word, but it's close enough. It was really disturbing or upsetting to me when I discovered this, because I was like, how can the thing that I take so much pride on, that my ego loves, be so detrimental to my mental and physical health?
Hmm. Yeah, I know. It's a real conundrum. And I think I'm kind of playing in the world of energy at the moment. And that divide, I think, when we're led by the mind, I think that's what causes that, is when there's some kind of connection with the body and the intuition, there's enough of a part of you that goes, hey, this is a lot. Can you do something for me? Like, and because most of the Western culture is all set around a divide between mind and body, a conquering of the body. Like, you push through, you keep going, you do what needs done, you never quit. Like, this is the messaging that we have.
You don't show weakness, you push through. I mean, there is so much valor almost for working the crazy hours, showing up, doing the impossible, pushing yourself through to work hard and then play hard, just as like, if you could burn the candle at both ends and survive, then you've really got it all figured out.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, this is what's championed. And in that process, I can't agree with you more that we've lost the ability to listen to our systems. Mm-hmm. And that's what I say more than anything. We all know how to rest for ourselves. You fundamentally know what you need to rest and replenish. The problem is you don't remember how to listen to it anymore. And when you do hear it, there's a high probability that you'll have a lot of voices in your head that are giving you objections on why that is not acceptable. That's not the right way to rest. You should be doing things that are more productive with your time. So that's why this is so difficult, because not only do you have to remember how to listen to your body, take those signals in, react at the right time, learn what recovery means for you, you also have to deal with all of the objections that are coming in, both from yourself and from society and what you think you're supposed to be doing.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a lot. It is a lot. And it's a lot. Really, the funny thing, I've just recorded a little mini training about basically this very thing. Because for people starting a business, you have to get up off the ground a lot of times and get smacked back down a lot of times when you are starting out, right? Because there's so much to learn. There are so many mistakes to make. There is so much to do and not enough time. Most of us, if we're in the sort of 30 plus bracket, probably have family, friends, loved ones, relationships that we're trying to manage alongside that. For women like myself in our 40s, we're going through perimenopause simultaneously, older than that, possibly menopause. So there's like all of this stuff.
Don't even get me into like the impact that hormones have on our energy levels and like how this is a conversation that's not even being had.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a discussion for another day, but yeah. I think we underestimate that. And I think as women, we sort of have that conversation about at least our cycle, but moving into menopause and everything else should not be underestimated.
Yeah, that was a big deal because, you know, you talked about that reserve tank. It's like somebody's going into the reserve tank on your behalf and like taking stuff out. You're like, well, hey, hang on a minute. I put stuff in there and now it's gone. Like, where the hell is it? Very frustrating.
And I love how you're taking your background in stress and mapping that to the energy conversation. Because I think in many ways, looking at energy management and looking at stress, it's kind of like two sides of the same coin.
Mm.
And by understanding them a bit more, and that's why I love having conversations with you, because you always bring me new insights. Oh, that's how that maps. Oh, that's how that makes sense.
Cool. I love that. It's the same. It's the same for me because we are running tracks that are right next to each other, I think, but we're examining different information, or we're looking for tiny little different gems. But then when we bring them out and you look at them together, you're like, oh, cool. They go together. That's really smart. So the other thing I wanted to ask you, coming back to that question about things that reliably deplete you, actually, I loved the fact that you said superpower mode, because that, again, is in this training that I'm putting together. I call it the hustle and collapse cycle, because often I think a lot of us hustle because we know the collapse is coming and we're trying to outrun it because we're like, I can't sustain this. I can't sustain this. Run harder, run harder, run harder, run harder, because I can't sustain it. I can't sustain it. But we don't know how to slow down and be productive. Like that description of what you said about going and having that time where you worked in the morning, then you had the afternoons off and you kind of accidentally fell into that pattern. But if I was to say to somebody who's in superpower mode, like, hey, here, how about you do this? Like, take a half day and still do everything that you're going to do, but take half the day off. People would be like, oh, you're freaking joking. I haven't got time for that. Like, no.
Half day is a big request. My favorite is people's reaction to, are you taking a disconnected lunch break?
Yeah.
Are you taking the 30 minutes that's in your contract that you're not getting paid for to actually stop working, disconnect from those conversations for 30 minutes and just literally feed your body?
Yeah.
And take that moment to let your system just go.
Absolutely. Yeah. I used to train time management in corporate environments. And that was one of the big things that we always talk. I'd ask them, first of all, I'd start by saying there is no such thing. We're here to do a time management course. There is no such thing as time management. There is self-management. There is no time management. It ticks away at the same rate every day, no matter what you do. But one of the things that would often come up was this thing about breaks, because people value action so much more than space, that there's still the sense of, if I'm not working, I'm not progressing. But we really struggle to measure slow progress and backtracking. So we'll spend an entire day. I've done it in the last 3 days, because the training that I've just told you about, I recorded it. And the way that I did it created some problems for me, which meant I've spent 3 days editing the video. I had a call with my mentor yesterday. And she said, next time, talk to me first. She said, this software, you could have re-recorded it. It would have taken you 25 minutes. Now you've spent 3 days on it because you didn't ask the question. And I think a lot of the times we don't use the resources that are available to us when we're stuck. We just try and figure it out. And so we go harder and harder. Like, I worked till 10 o'clock at night to finish this thing because I didn't have time to finish it during the day, and so on and so on. So I added all kinds of stresses to a thing that actually didn't need to be there in the first place. And maybe had I stopped and given myself space to breathe and think, it might have occurred to me to go, maybe I should just ask Maggie if there's another way, like whether this is any good, or, you know, can I figure something else out? Maybe just taking a moment and stopping in my tracks might have created space for some other option to present. But in the absence of any option, I just ran hard at finishing this thing. And now it's finished. It's not very good. And I'm going to re-record it after we've had our podcast today. So there you go.
Well, it's actually something I work with my clients to do, is we look at their ideal day or their ideal week. And we look for where are the white spaces in your day? And how do you start protecting those white spaces? Because we're constantly running. Anytime where there is white space in our agenda, we tend to fill it.
Mm.
Like, maybe I need to be on my phone, or I have this email to send or something. And it's like, what if we gave ourselves permission to have agenda-free time where there's no obligations for what you're supposed to do, how you're supposed to show up, or where you're supposed to be? And just in those moments, allow yourself to do whatever is there. And if you know that these moments are coming in your agenda, much like, you know, like, I know I'm going to go to the gym 3 days a week and it's in my agenda and I honor that space and I don't have to worry about when it's going to happen because I know it's there. White space can be just as powerful in your agenda, knowing, you know what? I know I have space to rest here. Mm-hmm. I know I can do whatever I want and need to in this space without having to justify it because this is my agenda-free time.
Yeah. Do you know, I love that idea. I also see some challenges with it because my work deals with emotions underneath habits. One of the things that I am very keenly aware of from my own experience, I see it with my kids and I see it with my clients, is people, one of the really uncomfortable emotions, and again, particularly because of how we structured our culture, one of the really uncomfortable emotions that we struggle with is boredom. I'm not even sure it's an emotion, but I call it an emotion or a feeling. So something that I have certainly struggled with, and I've seen my clients struggle with it too, and I definitely see my children struggle with it. Here's 20 minutes of white space. What are you going to do with it? People are like, oh my God, I don't want that. Like, what am I going to do with that? Like, I don't want to sit and just like, not be with my phone or not be talking to somebody or watching something. Like, that's a really uncomfortable space to be in. If I was to say to you, you know, there was it 2 years ago now? I did this dopamine fast, which was basically a day without seeking pleasure. So you're not looking for food or phones or things that are just pleasurable for the hell of doing them, but things that potentially are bad for you. Just take a break, create space. And I committed to one day. Didn't manage it.
Oh, interesting.
I did not manage it. I lasted like an hour. And then I was like, I've forgotten to send that email. I can't leave it another day. I'm going to have to deal with it. And by the time I did the email, I was like, all right, well, the dopamine fast is over now. So I'm gonna just, you know, forget it and try it another day. But honestly, that hour was really uncomfortable because I was like, I've got the whole day stretching ahead of me with no distractions.
And I think what you're talking about is like an advanced technique.
Yeah, I probably jumped in a little deeper than I was ready for back then.
It's like when I talk about, I think the first step for agenda-free time is just giving yourself permission not to have a to-do in that moment. And believe me, in my agenda-free time, I'm usually doing something else. I'm going for a walk. Maybe I'm watching a series. Maybe I'm playing a video game. You know, maybe I called my mother. Like, who knows what I want to do in those. Maybe I'm researching something for my business because that's something I'm in the mood to do. But it's just this sort of like, I don't have an active to do, an active requirement that I've either made a promise to myself or to somebody else within this window.
Okay.
And whatever I decide to do here is 100% allowed.
Okay, got you. So it would still be full anyway, but full of things that you didn't feel you had to do. So exactly. You're not like, okay, well, I've got to get the washing done and I've got to do this and I've got to do that. It's like, okay, I'm taking these 10 minutes and I can just have them for whatever I want them.
Exactly. And I agree with you that I think that stillness, that level of boredom, I mean, I think this is one of the problems, one of the reasons that people have such a hard time not multitasking is because when you're doing a single task at a time, it gets really quiet and it's very uncomfortable to be doing only one task at a time and only focused on one thing.
Yeah.
You know, it's that boredom. But as I said, I feel like that's an advanced maneuver. That's like something you do once you get comfortable just not doing something productive or that's required of you. Moving outside of the shoulds and the have tos and starting to listen to yourself, because that's also the no agenda time is also a moment where you're listening to yourself. What do I need right now?
Yeah. Yeah. And again, the more we establish that connection, the better. So coming back then to that things you do reliably. So I want to reverse it and I want to come back and ask you things you do reliably that refill the tank. So when you've seen yourself go into a negative, you know, right, I've got to do X, Y, and Z for myself now. What are those things?
For me, it really comes down to stopping.
Okay.
And for me, it really comes down to different levels of just sort of disconnecting. I am a very cerebral person. Probably clear since I run a company called Measurable Wellness. So things that for me to recharge usually involves things where I'm not using my mind, something where I'm more in the moment. One of the things I like to talk about, and this is a question I get a lot from people, is like, how are you tracking things that recover your energy? And I actually struggle with this, to tell you the perfectly honest truth. What I look at is, am I depleting? Or do I still have energy left? And rather than actively saying, okay, these are the things that help me recharge, I know things that help me take a break. I know things that help me disconnect when I'm in different modes of exhaustion. So like I consider superpower mode, like I consider there's 5 zones of exhaustion.
Mm-hmm.
And superpower mode is the second mode. So the first one is sort of when you're balanced and everything, you just are going with the flow. You feel like you're using some energy and then you're resting and it's just sort of balanced and in the flow. Then you have an energy leak. And that's when you're losing a little energy, but not enough for it to be super noticeable.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things I do is it's like, I map things you might say or reactions you have in these different zones so that you can identify them later. So for example, when I'm in an energy leak mode, I might not want to take out the recycling.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I decide not to recycle just because I'm too tired to be bothered with recycling. Mm-hmm. And then there's superpower mode, which we discussed. And then the next level is just being tired. And I think tired is usually the point where we start to recognize. And then the next level is pushing through or collapse or disconnecting. So this is where I'm still operating, but either I'm having phrases like, what can I do to get through this? Like, how am I going? You know, I'm just pushing through, or I'm still participating, but I've gone numb. Mm-hmm. And this is what's quite common, especially if I'm exhausted in social situations, I'll just shut off. You'll talk to me, but there's not much there.
Yeah.
And then the last one is just crash. And that's where your whole system really shuts down. It's when you find yourself crying on the couch because you're so exhausted that you can't do it anymore and you can't push through. You can't just pretend like you're okay anymore. Mm-hmm. And by going through these sort of things, I was able to sort of build in systems of breaks and disconnects, like, oh, I see this behavior. I hear these phrases that I'm saying in my head. And I was like, oh, ding, I'm in the zone. Maybe I should disconnect if I don't want to continue to deplete. But what am I doing to actively recover? I think is a hard question for me, because anything that I'm doing that's not actively depleting, I think is a bit of a recovery. I think playing with my kid, going outside and being in the park with me and playing with my son is a really regenerative thing because it's not a mental thing. I'm doing physical things. Going out socially can be, and that's that. And I do that sort of that energy mixing. I think if you read the literature, I think there's 5 zones of different energy, but I really look at just the 3 of what are you doing physically, mentally, or socially. And I mix it up. If I've been doing a lot of mental, then I'll do physical or social. If I've done a lot of social, then maybe I'll go read a book. I'll do some research or I'll go for a walk. Like you just have to mix that up. For me, I see it as more of sort of stopping the leak, stopping the depletion cycle, than it is actively recovering. But I think for some people that could really work, and you could just sort of think about it, you know, which of these balancing my depletion activities to my recovery, if it's something that resonates with you.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I instinctively do something similar, but also I'm no engineer, but highly cerebral and stuck in my head for an enormous amount of my life. So my issues, I don't even know what I would describe, where I would put burnouts. I was diagnosed with a heart attack when I was 36. I'd probably now, because they then once I'd been in hospital for a week and then they actually did the angiogram, turns out I hadn't had a heart attack at all. But I had all the markers of having had one. They never did pin a proper diagnosis onto it. They just said, like, we don't know. The only thing we can tell you is it's probably a virus. Looking back at that, I would say very similar to your experience. My body just went, you know what? I'm out. I have had it. If you're going to do this, you're going to do it without me. And one of the things that I didn't know at the time was the link between like everyday lifestyle habits and stress management. Now, anyone who's listened to my podcast before will know, because I harp on and on and on about these things all the time. But, oh my God, it makes such a difference that if the system, like, I don't know if you know this, but the body is made of 10 major systems. So okay. your skeleton is your skeletal system. You've then got your muscles, you've got your nerves, you've got your respiratory system, your digestive system, all of the various systems rely on being managed. It's a bit like a car. When you think about your energy, if you put the wrong fuel into your car, it grinds the engine to a halt and it's game over. We look after our cars, I think, a lot better than we look after ourselves. Like, we'll put the right fuel in. It doesn't matter how much they keep putting the prices up. We're like, no, you know, I'm not going to go for the cheaper one. I'm going to go for the one that's the right one for my car, whichever one that happens to be. I mean, diesel and petrol go up and down, but it's not like you switch to the cheaper one. You just put the one in that the car needs and that's the end of it. We don't ask any questions about that. But we don't do that with our bodies. And so one of the things, when I look back, yes, I was stressed at work, but I was also eating out a hell of a lot. Mm. So I was eating whatever was on the menu that I liked the look of. I was drinking relatively heavily, between half a bottle and a bottle of wine most nights. Some would say that's very heavily. It depends whether you're a drinker or not. Some people would be like, that's not that bad. So all of those things, I had enormous amounts of sugar because I also, my energy was dipping throughout the day. So I would rely on sugar and caffeine to get me through. I had no practices like meditation. I had no breathwork practices. I didn't do any of that stuff. So yes, the mental stress of work was hard, but actually I'm under similar mental stress today, but my body is being cared for differently. My systems are cared for differently. And so what I've also learned, like you talked about earlier, playing with your son and being in the park, one of my most depressing experiences was, you know, a few months, maybe even a year after the adoption, and I had so much opportunity to play with my children, but I didn't really like it. Like, I couldn't connect and I couldn't let go and I couldn't play because I was so in my head. And I was like, I have to be fun, but I don't know how to have fun. And they're going to break something. And this is and I had none of the skills to deal with that. And at that time, I was also still drinking and eating my way through my stress. So what I have since learned about all of that is the body primes the mind. So in much the same way as if you broke your foot, everything that you do gets harder. You know where the pain is because you're consciously aware of it. But when it's, you know, I've eaten for the last 3 months, I've eaten so much trash that none of my systems are operating the way they should. So my brain isn't working the way it's meant to. My body isn't working the way that it's meant to. And now I'm trying to think my way out of the problem and I'm trying to be present with my kids and I'm trying to have fun. It's like putting the wrong fuel in the car and then expecting it to go and then being like, what's wrong with your car? You are a crappy car because you don't work. I didn't have any of that information and I had no idea. And so I was very judgmental of myself. So the reason that I say all of that is because I think so much of what we hear is all about, you know, relaxing and being present and being grateful. You know, start a gratitude journal and do this and do that. And you're like, I mean, pardon the language, but when I used to hear that, I'd be like, oh, fuck off with the gratitude journal. You know, keep your stupid gratitude journal. I don't want to do a gratitude journal. I don't feel grateful. I feel like I'm trapped and I feel like I'm stuck and I don't know what to do about it. And I feel like there's something wrong with me because of it.
And if another person tells me to take a break or go for a walk or do 10 minutes of meditation, I'm going to punch him in the face, you know, over and over again. It's like if someone else tells me to take a break and that'll make everything magically better, I will destroy you.
Yeah. Oof. Yeah, exactly. So where do people start? Let's say someone's listening to this and they are aware that they're burning out. Like they're in the stress cycle, they're tired, it's all over the place. But really, like, you know, I don't know where to begin. What am I supposed to do now?
Actually, awareness is always my first step.
Okay.
So you said people are aware. So that's good. You are aware that something is going on. But how aware are you? And I think this is where data can become so powerful. You're tired, but how tired are you? Are you only tired on the weekends? Are your weeknights completely destroyed? Do you have any weeknight joy or is it gone? You know? And by becoming and starting to have these conversations of where am I really? Like how bad or how good? Like how bad is the situation or how not bad is it? Maybe it's just like I have these moments that feel really bad, but overall, it's not as bad as it looks like. And that's why I think that the tracking of the asking how much energy do I have remaining, even if you just do it for a week, can be really insightful because it's like when I look at my week, am I running neutral? Am I running? Do I have any positive days? Am I running neutral or am I operating 100% depleted? And then be realistic. Where am I in my life right now? As I mentioned, like sometimes you just operate depleted and that's the way it is for right now. I mean, the last week, last month that I worked in my day job when I was also trying to like get this business up and running at the same time was one of the lowest months I've had in the last 3 years. And it's like, okay, that's because I was doing 2 full-time jobs and dealing with the transition and redefining my identity. There was a lot of things going on. So it was a period of depletion. But I would say become aware and like start looking at the data and then you can start to see the patterns. And from those patterns, this is from the patterns, you can start to say, what do I want? Is this what I want? Am I okay with this in my life? Or do I want something different? And then you experiment. It doesn't have to be, I think there's a lot of pressure to say, you know what, today I'm going to start meditating and I'm going to meditate for the rest of my life, or I'm going to eat clean for the rest of my life. This is where I think experimentation is really powerful. So you can say, you know what, I'm going to run an experiment for the next week. I have my baseline data that I took last week. This week, I'm going to take a disconnected lunch break every day. What does this do for my system? What does this do for the data? Does it have an impact on how I feel? And then you can say, do I like this? Yes or no? Did it help? What worked? What didn't? You can tweak, you can adjust. And by doing those kind of micro experiments, it doesn't have that overburden of big life changes. It also doesn't feel like you have to ask for permission. If you just say, you know what, I'm going to try it for a week, then you don't have to deal with all the things because it's a temporary, it's an experiment. Test it, try it, look at the data. It's a feedback loop. I have my data. I discover what I want. I do the experiment. Then I look at the results. Then I adjust.
I love it. So if someone is listening to this and they're like, okay, I get that. But Evelyn, I'm going to need you to hold my hand. Like, I want you to help me figure out what I'm supposed to measure and how I measure it and what I do. How do people work with you?
Right now, the easiest way to do it is just send me an email. Yeah. So you can find me at evelyn@measurablewellness.com. And for everyone here today, I'll include a little video that does a recap of the two tank model and introduces the the energy tracking thing, and I can give a little template for your audience to dig in. So if you liked the idea but didn't quite follow everything, I have a little video that walks you through that. So that's something I'd be happy to share with your audience if they would like that.
Amazing. Okay, so we will put a link to that video in the show notes as well. Again, you can find that at bighappylife.co.uk. Evelyn, thank you so much. It was a huge pleasure talking to you. And I think what I've really taken away is, number one, this is about us as individuals. We don't have to follow a specific set of rules. We have to listen to ourselves, experiment, and track so that we can really see over a period of time what works for us and what doesn't, rather than trying to kind of guess at it or rely on memory, which isn't always that reliable.
Exactly.
Amazing. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I really enjoyed our conversation today.
So there you have it. I hope you got as much out of this conversation as I did. I really am going to take from this the necessity to measure more carefully some of the things that are quite sort of subjective and open to interpretation. Because in the absence of doing that, we sort of lose track of ourselves and we don't know how we're doing on an ongoing basis. And I think when it comes to protecting ourselves from becoming overstressed or even burning out, we need to be able to see what's happening over a period of time. And that potentially could give us the information we need to turn things around soon enough to avoid catastrophic burnout. If you found this episode helpful, please do share it with others who may also need to hear it today. And if you'd like to leave a review, that really helps elevate the podcast and allow it to be heard by more and more people, which would be awesome, because wouldn't it be great to have a whole load of people who are less stressed, less harried, and able to show up for family, friends, and just life in general in a way that feels so much better. I'll be back with another episode next week, but for now, thanks for listening.